Good morning. Welcome. My name is Sharon, and I serve the village's education coordinator. Everybody, there are two handouts here. Does everybody have? And I think Hal would also like you to have one blank sheet of paper if you didn't bring one in. That's all they need, and a writing utensil. So there are a few pens there if you need them. Friendly reminder about teaching session evaluations, which are around the fire pit for you to fill out during the week, which we appreciate. And also something new this year are the recommended reading lists by faculty. That there, you can find these here in the library and in the store. So these are for all summer long. The faculty have recommended reading for you to take home and take a look at. And for most of them, we have one copy in the store for you to look at to see if you would indeed like to purchase. There are also copies of the New Testament in the store. Dorothy, I think we still have copies, right? Thank you. So you can purchase those if you so desire. So welcome back, Hal, full house again. Today, Hal's going to talk about the gospel meeting. So thank you so much.
Thanks so much, Sarah. A couple odds and ends. We overflowed into the upper deck yesterday. Please feel free to do that as well. If I am not speaking loudly enough, please signal that to me. I have a nasty habit of dropping my last syllable of a sentence. So please call me on it, and I'll try to do better. Secondly, just a note about later on today. Some of you have been asking about a New Testament, this major project, a public project that I published with Houghton Mifflin Harcourt 4 years ago. And this is a, Houghton Mifflin Harcourt was very generous. They paid for 19 different national spiritual leaders like Barbara Brown Taylor and a bunch of bishops and a bunch of a number of scholars who were interested in the public. And then they asked us to, of 75 newly discovered documents, they asked us to pick 10 that might be added to a New Testament. So a New Testament has 37 books in it, not 27. So we did add 10 that we thought were would be the most valuable to spiritual and intellectual integrity in our day. I'm going to do a reading on the New Testament this evening at 6 o'clock in Chalet 2. Although we're touching on this all the time, this class, we don't have time to really sit down and think through the larger question of all of the new discoveries that have happened in the last 150 years and what that means for those of us in terms of trying to understand how the early Christ movements happened, and secondly, how that literature might be useful or not so useful to us in our day. So if you want to come at 6 o'clock this evening in Chalet 2, we'll have a little bit more chance to have some leisure in thinking about the big picture of all of the more recently discovered literature from early Christianity. And I would also just want to apologize. As we said yesterday, I'm trying to really work on us having a combination of intellectual and spiritual work done in this hour, and I've been trying to concentrate mostly on us having enough time for some spiritual exercise in this hour, and I fear that sometimes I haven't taken enough time to explain things to you. So first of all, please forgive me for emphasizing spiritual exercise. Secondly, please come up afterwards or before and talk to me. And thirdly, if you just grab me anytime around the village. Today we're going to do the same thing as we did yesterday. Yesterday we somehow the publicity said we were doing just John, but then we did John and Thunder Perfect Mind. Today we published the Gospel of Mary, but we're also going to look at the Gospel of Matthew and Mark. We'll prioritize the Gospel of Mary, and so you have two kinds of handouts. One like yesterday, a one page front and back. On the front is going to be the spiritual exercise and the text related to it in the Gospel of Mary, and on the back those in the Gospel of Matthew and Mark. But on the other page you have the entirety of the Gospel of Mary. So that is mostly just for your information. This was actually the top vote getter when we decided which new 10 new books to add. That was the Gospel of Mary. And that's in the New Testament along with a lot of commentary on it. But if you just want to have a little bit more of a sense of the Gospel of Mary, as we go fairly directly into one part of it, just for our own spiritual exercise this morning, please take that home and let me know what you think. Just a very little bit about the Gospel of Mary. How many of you have read the Gospel of Mary? One, two, three. Okay. That's exciting. Because often I will ask a crowd in Australia last fall the same question, and half the people of 250 people in the room raised their hand. So I never know. It's a thing out there, and some people have been in contact with it, and others have not. Just a little bit of historical information about the Gospel of Mary. It was found in the late 19th century in Egypt, where much of the newly discovered documents have been found. It was bought by a German scholar in Egypt who brought the manuscript home. In the meantime, we found another couple of partial manuscripts of it. In fact, the one that was initially found is only a partial document. We'll look at that in a moment. So it took 50-some years for the Gospel of Mary simply to be translated from the Coptic to German first, and then to English. We can talk a little bit more maybe this evening about the complexity of finding and then putting such texts out to the public. The Gospel of Mary is the only known gospel that has the protagonist, the main character, as a woman, as someone called Mary. That's all she's called. So of the three major Marys in the canonical gospels, we are not sure which one this is. As you know, we scholars try to always say more than we know, and so we think this is the Gospel, the Mary Magdalene, but we're not sure. There are some scholars who think it's Mary the Mother, and it could be Mary of Bethany. And then the main thing is that of all women in the first century who lived in Galilee, 25% of them were named Mary. So it could be someone completely different than those three canonical Marys. This is not authored by Mary. It's about Mary. We think that this was authored in the early second century, probably around the time that the Gospel of Luke was written. And we do not have any idea who wrote it, except for the character of what the writer was. And we'll learn that firsthand in some cases this morning. We're only going to be able to take a small portion of the Gospel of Mary as our spiritual exercise today. But I want to say just a little bit about the rest of the this. We're aiming at what I think is, in the Gospel of Mary, an intentional spiritual exercise. Out of a larger story, and the larger story in two or three sentences is this. Jesus is leaving. I mean, not like on a vacation, but Jesus is leaving for good as the story opens. And he is basically reminding his followers, his close group of followers, of what he has been teaching. And then they all break down and start crying, saying, if they kill him, why won't they kill us? Mary steps forward into the small group of scholars, the small group of followers, and clearly she is one of the leaders in that. And she says, don't cry. Try to remember what he said. And then the text says, and she turned their hearts to the good. Then they say, well, could you tell us some of the things that Jesus told you but didn't tell us? And she did, and that's what we're going to study this morning. But after that, after she tells to the other disciples what Jesus has told only to her, Andrew and Peter say, this is silly, it can't be right. Why would Jesus have us told something to a woman and not to us? And then Levi comes to Mary's side on this, and then there are two different endings to the Gospel of Mary, one in which only Levi goes forth and announces the good news, and the other is that all of them do. So there's more to the story, but that was my five sentence version. Okay, so let's turn then to our handout, which says at the top, the ascent of the soul in the Gospel of Mary, a spiritual exercise from the Gospel of Mary, chapter 9. Now, here's my first apology, and that is, the language in this part of the Gospel of Mary is fairly complicated and hard to understand in a short time, so I have summarized it. You have the whole text, and I commend that to you at another point. I think we'll get further to our own hearts and the heart of this spiritual exercise in this gospel, if we take the version that I've given you. And I'm going to read this out loud to you and do a little commentary on it as we go, but I'm mostly wanting you to actually maybe close your eyes in the next half hour and just feature this and what it happens. So this is a story of the ascent of the soul to God. Now, the first thing you need to know is that in the ancient world, there are a lot of stories of the soul ascending to God. Some about the soul ascending to God after one dies, and some the soul ascending to God before one dies. So, for instance, not many people know that in 2 Corinthians, Paul says he was taken to the third heaven in an ascent of his soul. And there he talked in the third heaven, and then came back. It's almost certain that this text here, the Gospel of Mary, is also an ascent of the soul of a person who is still quite alive. So, in other words, here the ascent of the soul to God is a spiritual process that goes on in people's lives, just like it did with Paul and here. And there are a bunch of other Christian and non-Christian documents where the ascent of the soul is not an after-death experience. So, the soul was ascending to God. As it traveled towards God, it came to the second power. Why not the first power? Because we lost that part of the Gospel of Mary. And the second power is called desire. Desire challenged the soul as it was going to God as to where the soul was going. The soul said it was going to God, but desire interrogated the soul as to its worthiness. The soul responded to desire about the soul's capacity to go to God and explained the desire had misunderstood the soul in all its complexities. And the soul proceeded toward God in joy. So here's the plot structure. There are powers that are trying to stop the soul of getting to God in this life. And the first power is desire. Secondly, okay, here's the next story. As the soul went further toward God, it met ignorance. Ignorance examined the soul, asking where it was going and warning against the possibility that the soul was under the power of something wicked. Here, too, the soul responded, agreeing that it had been ruled by an alien force, but knowing also that all things are being released. And then the soul ascended further. Then the soul saw another power, full of all kinds of danger, but best characterized as anger. Anger also asked the soul whence it came and where it was going. The soul assured that it was no longer under the control of forces beyond itself. Then the soul rested in silence, content that its desire was filled, its ignorance was behind, and its process complete. It was with God. Now, before we just ask ourselves to be inside this story, to let it be our soul that's going towards God now, just a couple of things to notice. So the three powers in the ascent to God are things that we know a lot about, right? A lot of us know about ignorance. A lot of us know about desire, and a lot of us know about anger. So this is almost certainly an ascent of the soul for those of us who have anger, ignorance, and desire. It's probably not about somebody who's already dead. Yeah.
Is there any thought of what the first, you said the first level we don't know about? But given that these seem to be progressions that mm-hmm. we experience in various levels of our life even now, what do they anticipate maybe the first level might have been?
Thank you. I am going to stonewall your question. mainly because scholars are differing on that, and I don't want us to get into heady things right now. I'm willing to talk at length about it afterwards.
Thanks.
So, yes.
I'm an artist.
Please. Yeah.
And when I do projects, there are at some point in many projects where I lose track of time, and I call it thin places with God. And I think I've gone through the steps before I get to that thin place with God, with anger and desire to do a good job, and putting this piece in front of God and wanting it to be something that shows the power and love of God. I know where those places are, those thin places, and I keep wanting to come back to those thin places.
So this is an invitation for you. Mm-hmm. And what I want to suggest, and we'll go there in just a few moments, I want you to be interrogated by those powers as you make your way toward God. And I want you to consider that they are not all negative. I'm not wanting to say whether they are or are not in you, but I want you to, for instance, take the possibility that anger as a power can help people and can hurt people. The same with ignorance and the same with desire. In other words, one of the cool things I think about this exercise that's just written out for us in an admission document is that it says that the way to God involves negotiating ignorance, desire, and anger. Not thinking necessarily that it's, I mean, if you're like me, sometimes I thought my anger was all good. And sometimes I thought it was all bad. So this is wanting you to think more open-endedly about this. So I'm going to read just your brief directions down at the bottom, and then we'll go at it with rewriting or just thinking. In this exercise, lay at least temporarily aside the conventional notion that desire, ignorance, and anger are completely negative forces. Similarly, place at least temporarily in abeyance the idea that the process of the soul going to God is an event of the afterlife. And notice that in this story, the soul is in process more than it is a completely stable entity. Put yourself in the role of the soul and walk within the soul through the story in the following manner, if you would. If you've got another way to do it, please do that. As the soul, you, encounter desire, ignorance, and anger, in each case, have a conversation with these powers. Note in your mind or heart or on paper where each power has given you gifts, sustenance, expressiveness, and spirit. You may want to underline those four things. See if the power, where powers have actually given you that. Similarly, note where each power has damaged, deformed, caricatured you, and or made you addicted. Stay with this awareness of both the gifts and the damage done by these desires. Feel gratitude, regret, and ambivalence of your life in relationship to these three powers as you go towards God. Take some moments with and as the soul. At the end of that interrogation, as you rest with the soul. So in other words, give yourself a chance to have that interrogation with each of them. And I've suggested categories that are positive and negative that you might. And then let yourself basically feel gratitude, regret, and ambivalence about how the interrogation has gone. In other words, don't ask for final answers. Just recognize your gratitude. Recognize your regret and recognize your ambivalence and give it to God. And then just let it all drop away and feel silent. Questions about my suggestion as to how you might do this? I would say one other thing, because I've done this with a lot of people in small and big groups, one-on-one. If this, I mean, this is relatively heavy stuff for each of us. If it gets too dangerous, stop it. We aren't in a one-on-one session where we can go there. If you feel danger in any interrogation of any of those powers, drop it. Go to the next, or just be silent and ask God to be with you. Other questions about how to do this? Thanks. I'll call you probably between 10 and 15 minutes. If you don't get finished, you've got them all week. Thanks. And let's come back. So yesterday there were 65 of us in the room. And that means that it processing our spiritual exercise is probably inappropriate with 65 folks. But I want to talk a little bit about ways to go further if that seems helpful or scary to you. So one of the things, of course, that I would recommend is that the richness of being in a beautiful wilderness with a supportive community is ours. And so if things are cooking within this exercise, there are several things I would recommend. One would be, do it again. Maybe not where people are buying and selling coffee. I apologize for this side of the room. And then just take some walks and think about it. Allow yourself to be in prayer explicitly or implicitly and take some time. Probably you don't want to try this in the dining hall. That has its other riches. Another couple of things just to say out loud before we go to the next move. So if some of you want to have another hour on this exercise in a small group, let me know and we can announce it. Some of you want to go further together and apart, but to have a smaller space for some conversation about it, I would be welcome to put that together. Secondly, I'm quite sure that some of you have not quite allowed your consciousness that we at Holden have a full-time spiritual director. I mean, that's just breathtaking. And she is spectacular. So if you feel like this spiritual exercise was helpful or troubling in ways that might be productive spiritually, Heather Swanson is here for all of that and other things. Similarly, we have two very powerful and helpful pastors. So I commend those all to you, as well as the possibility of us taking this into a smaller group to work on. I apologize also that right now there are things in your hearts and on your minds that I'm not asking you to speak out loud is just, I think, too dangerous and too powerful for us to process all in this big time, in this big size. So thank you so much for trying it on. Also, you know, you may just want to read that there's lots of other good things about the Gospel of Mary. And in quite different arenas. So the Gospel of Mary is clearly one of the big things that the Gospel of Mary does, is it has an actual drama about a woman being rejected as a spiritual leader. It's not really very often that the early church's literature has provided us with that. Okay, so I want to just take another text from Matthew and Mark and just do a little dip into it. Turn to the other side. I am, by the way, not giving you a copy of the Gospel of Mark and Matthew. I think you know where that is. But what I've done is I've worked with two parables from each of those Gospels, and they're in similar territory to the Gospel of Mary. But they're parables, not visions. So we just saw a vision, and now they're parables. But one of the things about these parables is I think they have a similar flexibility and depth for working on hard things. So I put on the back of the title here, Processing Loss and Ignorance in Matthew and Mark. So we'll just read this out loud, each of them, and then I'll ask you probably to read it to yourself. The Gospel of Matthew. The realm of heaven is compared to a person who sowed good seed in the field. I have to stop right here. So you'll notice that the Gospel of Mark calls the realm of, or the kingdom of Gospel of Mark says the kingdom of God or the realm of God, and Matthew says the realm of heaven or the kingdom of heaven. It's an easy answer to this confusion. The people of Matthew, the writers and readers of Matthew, were especially Jewish. And then, like now, most Jews don't say the name of God. So all of the parables in Matthew alone, not Mark, Luke, or Thomas, which all have parables, none of those say, they all say the kingdom of God. But the Matthean folks are being, in their own spirituality, saying, no, I know we can't, I can't say that word. So this is the substitute word. So if you're in the business of saying God now and then, just substitute God for heaven. Because it's a little confusing, since heaven means a lot of other things for us than a substitute for the word God, right? So heaven often means way up there. So one thinks that the Gospel of Matthew is talking about what heaven is like when we go to heaven. But it's simply doing a good vocabulary and being pious in a way that all good Jews are. Okay, I'll go on with the story. The realm of heaven / God is compared to a person who sowed good seed in the field. But while everyone was asleep, his enemy came and sowed weeds among the wheat and went away. So when the new wheat shot up and ripened, the weeds made their appearance also. The owner's slaves came and said, was it not good seed that you sowed in the field? Where then do the weeds come from? An enemy has done this, was the owner's answer. Do you wish then, the slaves asked, to go and gather the weeds together? No, he said, because when pulling out the weeds, you might uproot the wheat with them. Let both grow side by side until harvest. And then I will say to the reapers, gather the weeds together first and tie them in bundles for burning, and bring all the wheat into my barn. Okay. Just a little story about what God's realm is like. Here's Mark, in a similar vein but different. This is what the realm of God is like a man who has scattered seed on the ground and then sleeps by night and rises during the day while the seed is sprouting and growing. The ground bears the crop of itself, first the blade, then the ear, then the full grain of the ear. But as soon as the crop is ready, immediately he harvests it. Two little parables about somebody sleeping and somebody working in the field, right? In one case, everything turns out right and the owner didn't do any work. In the other case, somebody messed with him. So just a little bit of a moment to say something about parables and their spiritual possibilities. One of the wonderful things about the parables in the Gospels is that they are these little anecdotes. They're generally not moral, but they're just kind of snapshots of something that happened. Often, they're snapshots of things that happen where there's conflict. Sometimes it's just wonder. Sometimes it's wonder and conflict. So the realm of God seems to be in the Gospels, both inside and outside the canon, seems to be a place that is present, not just future. And the idea when you hear these stories is to see where the realm of God is right in those scenes. So for instance, here, I would want to say, in these two stories, we might want to check in on what happens when we sleep, conflict or wonder or something else. What happens when somebody does something hurtful to us? And what happens when everything works out all right? And to see if the realm of God is in each of them. Or see where the realm of God is cooking in us. Where it is coming through. I would assume that the reason that the Jesus parables are all over the map in terms of fights, wonder, and little snippets of something that happens in the market is because we all are different in terms of what happens to us and what's going on with us. So my suggestion for our shorter exercise right now is, you'll see at the bottom, notice how you feel about what goes on at night in the stories and what happened. Remember other things recently that have happened to you at night while you're asleep or while you're awake. So in other words, just like in the exercise before, let down your guard a little bit, not too far, but let you to remember something that happened at a supper someplace for you in the evening, or a walk you took in the evening. It doesn't have to be in the evening, but the really interesting thing about evening is we're relaxed a little bit more often, or we're tired and our guard's a little bit down. And then, of course, if you've been aware of something that happens while you're sleeping, either in your head or in your life, hold that up. Then let yourself be open to a variety of responses to what has happened to you recently in your life. And whether you can sense in the conflict, in the wonder, in the happenings, the realm of God present to you. Questions? So what, the two things go towards your own experiences based on these, or if that's too confusing, just stay with the stories in the scriptures and see what, where the realm of God is happening, and be thankful for it, be aware of what it might be doing for you, even in the middle of a mess. Four minutes. I'll call you back in 4 minutes. Just a little tease. And let's come slowly back together. Well, I just bumped into, in my meditation, the feeling that in my job, that I haven't been doing for 3 years because I'm retired, that some people stole something from me. I mean, they took something away from my work, and I'm still disgruntled or mad about it. So I just noticed that this is a nice place to sort of hold that up a little bit more in the light. It's at some safe distance. But it seems to be still bothering me. In the Gospel of Mary, the first thing that I struggled with in terms of desire, I'm not telling you because it's too private. The second thing, as I interrogated with ignorance, I noticed the deliciousness of this week in ignorance and being able to admit it, because as we said yesterday, I'm talking with so many of you about stuff I'm supposed to know. And I think this is one of the first times I've noticed that ignorance really in this case is bliss. In terms of anger, for me in this particular prayer exercise, I was aware that so much loss and conflict in our country, I've been trying to stay even keeled about it. And I'm noticing that I need some safe place to be angry. To not mess other people's process up. But I noticed that I've probably not been enough of a friend with the power of anger. I know that some of us have been too much a friend of the power of anger in some of these ways. So thanks. We'll be talking with Mark tomorrow.